The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting for seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Sunday Space Show program live. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. A couple of very quick announcements and then right on to our program. For those of you who would like to call us, it is toll-free 1-866-687-7223. And if you prefer using email, it is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com, or you can use our blog, which is off of our website. If you need to know how to do that, please email me for short instructions at drspace@thespaceshow.com. The website newsletter for the coming week will be posted pretty quickly after today's program ends. Remember, all of our programs are archived. You can easily download them or listen right off of our website. Don't forget our Space Show store, which is through Cafe Press. To get there, click on Pepper listening to the Space Show pictures, and Pepper will take you right to our show if you're interested in T-shirts and logo wear. Do also remember that the Space Show is listener-supported, which means that you, the listeners, through your financial contributions, keep the Space Show on the air, and that's very important to all of us, and we appreciate your support. So remember, we're a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. If you're fortunate to be a U.S. taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift. If you're more fortunate to pay California's taxes, you also get a tax deduction. We're a public benefit California corporation. Visit our parent nonprofit, OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, for more information, and or email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. There's a large PayPal button on the homepage for those of you who would like to support us through PayPal. At the same location, there's information on how to do so by check if you do not want to do so through an electronic means. And again, it is your support that keeps us on the air. In addition to the individual support that I've been talking about, we do have sponsors. So remember, the sponsors get their banner ad going across the homepage, which they can change whenever they want. And on full-length programs, which this is today, I do read a very short sponsor message. So for the first segment, for example, Moonwords is a sponsor. What if a group of nations were determined to build a town on the moon and then base their decisions only on technical and economic merit? Moonwords is building a digital vision of that town where you will be able to learn, play, build, and go to events. Visit moonwords.com to download an early draft demo of the town and to fund its development by subscribing. Help us help the world see a bigger future where we can leave our past behind us. The Space Foundation sponsors us, and their 36th symposium is coming up in April, again in Colorado Springs. I suggest you check it out. You need to go to at least one symposium and probably a lot more. They're very unique space conferences. Their website, spacesymposium.org, and also spacefoundation.org. And both of those will help you. AIAA sponsors us, and the AIAA is the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. It is the world's largest aerospace professional society. They have 5 events or conferences a year, plus quite a few other types of events. You can find out all about it, attend, and have great networking, plus access their database of reviewed papers going over decades. And to get more information, go to AIAA.org. And I'm sure you'll find it very rewarding, as will their programming. Northrop Grumman sponsors us, and they're a leading global security company providing innovative systems, products, and solutions for government and commercial customers worldwide. They offer an extraordinary portfolio of capabilities ranging from undersea to outer space and cyberspace. So check them out as well. And that brings me to today's program. So I'm really happy to bring back Rand Simberg and Bill Simon, and they are two of the co-authors for the Ebola Terra Ceremony, which is the story of when we first left Earth. And we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 yesterday, and this is the closest date we could come to the Apollo 11 date for a live space show program. So this is our annual Ebola Terra space show program with Bill and Rand. Both of them have full bios posted on the website, the space show website, so check it out and get their full bios. But they are the authors of this great ceremony and program that we're going to talk about. Rand and Bill, welcome back to the show. It's good to talk to you. And I'm going to lead off with an email I got from a listener in London, England. Normally I don't lead with a listener email, but I will today. This is Joshua in London. And he says, I've heard all of your space show Ebola Terra programs, and I like this particular program very much when it comes up on the space show. I can't listen live because of the time difference with London, but I do have a question. Given that this is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, what do you each think the significance and importance is of Ebola Terra as we look back 50 years and hopefully can look forward? Where does Ebola Terra take us? What does it do for us, and how does it help us to move forward? I'd really appreciate hearing from each of you as to your thoughts on my broad-ranging question.
Okay, this is Bill.
Okay.
I could start with a thought. The idea of Ebola Terra was to provide a historical basis, if you will, for this event, the landing on the moon. And one of the things that's happened over time is that I don't remember the names associated with various things, whether it be Newton or the Wright brothers or whatever. And part of this was to remember these key events and pass that down through time. The Ebola Terror was written with the idea that it would be possibly being done hundreds of years from now, even in other parts of the solar system. And it would reflect upon that monumental event that took place 50 years ago yesterday.
Bill, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, because we've been getting an echo. I thought I may have lost you. So how would you summarize your reply to Joshua? How does it help us going forward?
It provides a basis of understanding from the Big Bang until to where we are and where we're going. That we're on an evolutionary trajectory.
Bill, your phone line is really breaking up badly.
I know.
Can I give you a try on your alternative line? Is it?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, and while I'm doing that,
Rand,
perhaps you can give an answer to Joshua.
Yeah. I guess the question is, how does it help us going forward?
Well, that's one of them. He wanted to know, I don't want to read it all again because it's long, but what's the importance of Ebola Terra and the significance on this 50th anniversary going forward?
I'm not sure the number changes anything. I think its significance is what we always intended it to be, which is to commemorate not just that particular event, which was to date, I don't think we've surpassed it, the highest technical achievement of humankind. But it was also a story. So that, because children aren't being taught this to the degree they should be in the schools, basically history and the history particularly of that allowed us to do that. You know, how did we get from primordial times to today? It's really kind of a retelling. It's a different Genesis myth because from in a religious sense it goes all the way back to the beginning of the universe, but it's based on science as we understand it, and science as we currently understand it, and technology as it evolves is what allowed us to go to the moon. As I say, I don't think I would have said the same thing on the 49th or on the 10th or maybe on the 100th if I'm around then. That's really the purpose. In terms of how it helps us going forward, I guess my hope is that it helps us to not forget that history, because those who forget history or don't know it are doomed to repeat it. And we hope it does. It is something is read by people on other planets or out in free space in colonies or whatever, that said, you know, this was the beginning of when we first started to get here, even though in some senses it was a false start.
It's really a sort of an educational context of human history and how we were able to do this going forward, and to build on it, we need to keep moving outward, I guess, along the lines of how we did it up until the point of Apollo, correct?
Yes. But I guess the thing that I would say is that 50 years on now, we can put it in a more historical context. That when we first started putting the ceremony together, it was in very recent memory. It was less than a decade and a half earlier. I think we started this like in 82 or 83, probably 83, 84, I think is when we first started to think about doing this, and we actually started putting it together. And at that time, shuttle had just started to fly. We still had hopes that, you know, we were going to finally pick up the pace again and get back to the moon. And I think we've learned since that, you know, we haven't been able to get back to the moon. And the primary reason is that Apollo was such an unlikely confluence of political events. But people continue to try to repeat it anyway. So if we're going to get back to the moon, we have to take a different approach than we have been. And I think we are. When I say we, I mean humanity, not necessarily the U.S. government. But even the U.S. government is to a degree, because, you know, we now have, as I wrote in my long essay back last fall about the return of the space visionaries, you know, we are in a period in which you can talk about space settlement in polite company. And we are starting to change the policy to make that possible. I think that Artemis itself is currently constituted is, you know, not going to happen. But I do think that we're going to get back to the moon, and sooner than a lot of people think.
And so it won't look at all like what Artemis is when we get back to the moon, in your opinion?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, my hope is that maybe 3 or 4 years from now, Elon will call Senator Shelby from the moon and ask him if he likes apples.
Think Shelby will still be around 3 or 4 years from now?
I hope not. But they're always going to be the Shelbys. Because there have always have been since the end of Apollo, when it transmogrified from a battle in the Cold War to a jobs program.
Under your idea, any kind of a timeline for when we may get back to the moon?
Well, I think it's possible by 2024. I just don't think it's going to happen using NASA hardware.
So 2024, but something other than the NASA Artemis program.
I mean, the most likely path right now to me looks me to be Super Heavy and Starship.
Bypassing Gateway or making use of Gateway?
Yeah, no. I don't think there'll be a Gateway.
Bill, any thoughts from you on that?
Or let me back that up. I think there may be, they may actually put some hardware in that orbit, but I don't think, I'm certainly, Elon's not going to bother with it.
So the private sector won't bother with the Gateway is basically what you're saying?
Certainly not initially.
Bill, any of your thoughts about the current program and how we may get back to the moon?
No, I don't have any particular prediction other than I agree with Rand. I think that long before the government gets there, the private sector will be there. And they're doing it the way that I was just asked. It's an interesting thing. I was just asked by a friend of mine, if we had to do today the kind of effort that was put into Apollo in the 60s. In other words, that all-out effort to just build something from, when you consider where they came from, knowing essentially very, very little and inventing everything. And it's mind-boggling what was accomplished in that short period of time. So he said, what would it look like today if we were doing something like that? And my immediate answer was, well, you look at what SpaceX is doing. They're motivated. They're motivated by their lifespan. They're motivated by time windows of launch opportunities. And they're motivated by competition. And that's what you see happening. If you want to see something that moved at the pace of what we did in the 60s, you look at SpaceX. So that's my observation.
When we go back to the moon, will there be a second chapter or an addendum to Evola Terra? Will that be commemorated somehow, do you guys think? Have you thought about that?
I don't think so. The whole, in my opinion, Evola Terra was that first step on another world. It's a watershed. Look, in history, we have one major watershed in history, and that was B.C. and A.D., right?
Right.
We all talk about a time B.C. and a time A.D. The landing on the moon was another very precise, highly documented moment in history that was a prior and an after. It was before the landing and after the landing. And so I would see that as yet another potential, ultimately a differentiation in the calendar. We are now 50 years after the lunar landing.
I just think about something, you know, and all this, the plethora of commentary and you know, stories and books even that have come out about it in the past you know, year or so, and particularly in the past week, that, you know, those other events, and if you think of it as this is a religious ceremony, which I do in some senses, a lot of the other holidays that we have are sort of arbitrary in terms of when we celebrate them. You know, the Jewish calendar moves around a little bit. You know, we celebrate the birth of Christ on Christmas, but he probably wasn't actually born on December 25th. We celebrate Easter. We have to make sure we're not trying to pick it to the day of some event where we say on this day, you know, so many, you know, 2000, whatever, years ago, you know, Christ died on the cross. They always make sure that it's on a Sunday, right? And they have this, some ecclesiastical rule that says, okay, here's the you know, algorithm for determining when Easter is. But with Apollo, it's like the first thing we have like this to commemorate that we know exactly when it happened. And in fact, when we did the ceremony last night, we wrapped it up pretty much just about the time that they were stepping out on the porch, exactly 50 years earlier. And this morning I was you know, listening to some of the commentary, and I was listening to Fox News, and Kristen Fisher is their White House correspondent. And actually, she may not be. I'm not sure what her current job is because she does weekend anchoring as well. But she is the daughter of astronauts. You know, she's the daughter of Bill and Anna Fisher. So you know, she was an ideal person to cover this. And so she's saying, you know, even as we're reporting this right now, is exactly 50 years ago that they're, you know, preparing to rendezvous in orbit on their way back to Earth. So I just think it's interesting that we actually try to time the event to, you know, exactly the anniversary, you know, if, you know, to the minute. At least we're able to do that because we know when it happened.
We know precisely when it happened. Absolutely. Do you is Apollo being? I guess I'll ask it this way. Do you think it's being properly remembered and discussed in the media and this week and a couple of weeks, you know, following up to Apollo? Or is it somehow being distorted in a way that, that might make it harder to move forward?
Well, it's a mix. I mean, there's been a lot of stupid, crappy stories about it. There was the thing in the New York Times this week where basically, you know, somebody said, "Oh well, America was, you know, we were a racist country, and there's a lot of." And it was, you know, it was a white male culture, and it was just white people went to the moon. But the Soviet Union, noble Soviet Union, no, they sent a woman first, and they sent an Asian first, and you know, which took a lot of, and you know, and it's like typical New York Times, right? Because they've been, you know, Soviet apologists, Stalinist apologists, going all the way back to the '20s, you know, 100 years, going on 100 years. But that's, so that's, there's an example of a crap interpretation. But there's been a lot of good coverage as well.
I've never seen so many books in my life, and a lot of the authors I've had on the show. I mean,
yeah, and
it's overwhelming.
I've got a pile of them, and I just, you know, to review, and I haven't had time to get through them.
It's an endless supply this year. Artemis is still the program that they're working to make happen. What do you suggest? I mean, how do we, I don't know, I would say like get out of the trap, but that's probably the wrong language. How do we sidestep it to really make progress to get us back to the moon? Because I agree with you, it's not going to happen with Artemis. And yet all the resources and effort are still going into Artemis.
Well, you know, we keep saying Artemis as though it's a well-defined thing. And if you think of Artemis as nothing except Americans get back to the moon, including a woman, then maybe Artemis can happen. What I would say isn't going to happen is it's not going to happen the way, you know, NASA says it's going to happen. Okay, because they're, Bridenstine's in a box. You know, he's got a politically impossible situation. Because he needs a lot more money to do it the way, you know, Congress wants him to do it, and yet Congress, you know, because Congress wants him to use SLS Orion, and they don't want to actually want to fund anything that you actually need to get back to the moon, and the whole purpose of the Gateway is to give SLS Orion some place that it can actually go, because it can't even, SLS can't even get Orion to the moon. So he's got this thing that he's going to have a lot more money to do it the NASA way, and yet Congress is absolutely not. The only way I can see this changing is if the Republicans take back the House in 2020. But because the current House is not going to fund anything that allows Donald Trump to say he got us back to the moon within his second term.
You have a phone call. Bill, do you want to comment on that, or should I go to the phone call?
Yeah, go to the phone call.
Okay. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is John in Fremont, California.
Hi, John. How you doing today?
Good, good. Hey, Bill and Rand. Happy Ebola Terra. I have a question. You know, to popularize Ebola Terra, I don't know anyone except space enthusiasts or very few people outside the space show audience that know of this ceremony. I may be wrong, but do you have any plans for expanding this to the general population? I know it would be better to focus on younger people, because this could really, really inspire them and teach a history lesson. My kids are grown, and they were probably too old by the time I heard of this, that, you know, they would, I don't know, they might have enjoyed it, but what are your thoughts on expanding this to a more broader audience?
Well, it's not like we've never thought about this. I guess I would just say we failed to do so. I don't know how to do so. We can't, are not getting the attention of the social media promoters.
Well,
and I can't, I do not know the answer why.
Well, okay. For one, this is Bill. We haven't really done anything to truly promote it. So it's not like we've knocked ourselves out for years trying to promote this and have failed. It's basically died on the vine, essentially. It's so I could tell you this. In our experiences over the years doing this, the people who, if I can say it, enjoyed it the most, or let me put it this way, the people who really, really enjoyed this were not space people. They were people that didn't know anything about space, and they were the most moved by this, by participating in the ceremony. That said, we know that, that this will resonate with people. But, you know, if somebody wants to take it and run with it, that's fine with us. But we're not doing it. We're not promoting it. Not because we don't want to. It's just that we just don't do it.
Well, but suppose we did want to do it. What would we do? Buy ads?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to necessarily get into a brainstorming session now about the marketing.
Yeah. But I mean,
you know,
I just think you can send it out. You could send it to a huge press release about it.
Well,
I doubt if anybody would care. I doubt if anybody in the media would really care about it. I mean, you know, on the 45th anniversary, 5 years ago, my book had just come out, which is not about Apollo per se, though it discussed Apollo. It had just come out, and I put out a press release saying, you know, on the anniversary, author says, not enough people are dying in space.
I remember that.
And you would think, you know how many responses I got from that? You can count on the fingers of 1 foot.
Well, probably you reached many more. They just don't respond.
If they don't follow up, if they don't do anything with it, you know, I felt like I threw this big boulder into a pond and didn't even make a ripple.
I have a similar problem with trying to promote something on the show, but I know they're hearing it because at some point I get something back from them, but they don't get off their butts to actually respond. And I know it's very difficult to move them to have a response. So
I mean, it's just crazy to me. I would have thought that that would pique somebody's interest.
I don't know. I've always thought that if you somehow got even some abbreviated form or that it was even there and what it was about in the school system where you could reach school kids to teach them about what's in there, because you have a lot of really accurate and important historical information. But I don't know how you'd get it into the school systems of today.
Yeah,
well,
that's another problem with it, I think.
It's
sort of politically incorrect to glorify Western civilization.
It's totally politically incorrect today. And that was, okay, so look, that was in part the purpose of this. When it was created in a time where we saw what was coming on the horizon. And it was this abandonment of reason, essentially. And the thing was to put into a ceremony here something that established all the, like we said, the benefits, the good stuff that humans have done. But it's basically an affirmation of Western civilization. Well, right now, Western civilization is equated as with white supremacy. This is the world that we're in right now. So, in a sense, this document is, you know, it's a historical document. There's nothing in here that isn't accurate. But it can be attacked six ways to Sunday by the left.
So probably not a good place to start. California probably would not be. I have another question. So we were talking about before and after milestones to maybe expand Evo Laterra. What about going interstellar, first humans interstellar?
What do you mean going interstellar? You mean
the first humans to go to another star? Would that be something that you would add on, or you know, modify Evo Laterra? Or I mean, are we done?
I think that would be a different celebration.
What would really be ideal? What would be ideal would be the people who go interstellar are take with them Evo Laterra. And they're doing this ancient ceremony, okay, from the 20th century. And they're doing it, you know, 200 years from now. They take it with them. We wouldn't necessarily create another, the Earth wouldn't necessarily create another ceremony. It would be the Earthling continuing. Let's say they populate another planet somewhere. They would, through a ceremony such as this, they would remember, and they could build upon it, right? So, but it would be them building upon it. It would be their future history that they would be documenting. But they would take with them this 20th century event when humans first left the home planet.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll leave you with one more comment. Elon was on CBS Sunday News this morning and made the comment that maybe you guys have seen on social media that he thinks he can put humans on Mars in 4 years. And I agree with Rand and Bill that you know, it's going to be the private sector. It's going to be either Elon or Bezos that really get us going with back to the moon. But it's not going to be on Elon time. So they'll get us there eventually, but, you know, Elon's a little bit optimistic.
Elon's always optimistic, but I think I do see it happening fairly quickly. I don't think people recognize the degree to which SpaceX probably has more knowledge about how to do what it's doing than any other organization on the planet. They've learned a lot in the last 17 years, and particularly from the Falcon and from the reusability. They're moving very quickly on Starship. And the analogy I would make is that I don't think people understand how not hard what they're doing is. It's basically what Bob Truax proposed decades ago with Sea Dragon, except they're not launching from the ocean. But the point that Truax made is that vehicles scale very well. Okay, it gets easier to do something if it's bigger. Now, NASA has never been able to accept that, just for various historical reasons. But you know, Truax proposed building Sea Dragon in a shipyard. And, you know, Elon's down there just building this thing out of stainless steel, which you can do if the vehicle is big enough. You can get the mass fraction you need with stainless, and stainless is a pretty damn good material to build a spaceship with, you know, for something that has to enter repeatedly. So I think they have a really pretty good idea. And, well, and plus, sometime in the next few days, Elon's going to make some announcements on the latest design change, because they're continually, you know, looking at these things, seeing better ways to do it. And, you know, he said just this past week, you know, 2 years, okay, that's Elon time. It's not going to be 2 years, but it might be three, it might be four. If it's five, that's 2024. So it'll be very interesting to hear what he has to say about it. The thing reminds me of something Renee Miller told me once. In the process of developing, improving jet engines, making them practical, that he said, you know, most problems, the more you look into it, the harder things get. You find new issues. Jet engines, it turned out that every time, the more we looked into them, the easier it got. And I think that's going to be the case with something like Starship. And Blue Origin may find it's the case with the new Armstrong as well.
Okay, well, thank you, Bill and Rand, for putting the ceremony together. I always look forward to it every year. And
John, have you ever...
Sign off.
Wait a minute, John. You don't get off that easy. Have you ever done the ceremony with your wife and daughter?
No. No, I haven't.
Why? This is a good test case. So you talk about how do you broaden it, and we can't even broaden it to a fan with his own family. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still there. I'm not sure how to answer it. I don't think that they would be interested, and it's for personal reasons.
Well, but it's your job to put it in front of them and try to get them in. I'm speaking out of turn because it's not my family, but how do they know? How do you know they're not interested if you don't say we're going to do this? And if you guys don't like it, we'll never do it again. But you know, give it a shot and see what they say about it. I mean,
well, can I ask a question? What is their objection?
I don't think.
Have you ever actually asked, or you just have a sense that they wouldn't be interested?
I have,
based on knowing them.
Yes, exactly.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is there's several aspects of this. One is it's technology, which may be boring to them, or it's religious, which may be offensive to them. So I'm trying to find out what is it that you think would bother them.
I think both of those.
Okay.
But John, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, believe me, but I anticipated your answer because I know you. But this is the same issue except on a micro scale. When you say to Rand and Bill, how do you broaden it? How do you get it into schools? How do you get more people listening to it? And then here we have people that really like it, and you listen to Rand and Bill on Evo Laterra every year, and out of the almost 19 years of the space show, we've probably done 15 Evo Laterra programs, which is about when I discovered it. So, and yet you can't do it with your family. So if we can't get our advocates and people who are absolutely legitimately committed to this, and they know the science and the technology and the human factors, and they're not, you know, running around with, you know, with Kool-Aid instead of hemoglobin, then there's something awry, and you're on the micro scale, but you're asking the question on the big, broad macro scale. But I think it's the same thing. There is a reason why it doesn't grow, and it's hard to get you know, people to want to participate in it or do it. We can't even get our own advocates to do it. Now, I bet if I ask this question to everybody who calls today, and probably now no one will call because they'll be afraid of being put through the cleaner, they'd have the same answer you have.
Well, let me point, you know, one suggestion is, does John have, if not his wife and daughter, does he have friends who are interested in space? Or is there nobody there you could even say, let's get together and do this, you know, without having necessarily involved the family? But I think there's another barrier to it, and it's not just the Western civilization, you know, patriarchy thing. It's that some people find it sacred. You know, I remember I've had an experience, I think back years ago, decades ago, Maura Makowski said, would just objected to it because, you know, she thought it was sacrilegious. Right. And we had a case where somebody liked the ceremony, but they didn't like the fact that we didn't have a creator in it. And they wanted to add that. And we had to kind of put our foot down and say, you can, you know, obviously you can celebrate it any way you want in the comfort of your own home, but you cannot put out a different version of this. You know, that would be a copyright violation. It kind of violates part of the purpose of why we wrote it. So there may be some resistance from that as well. I don't know.
I don't know.
Well,
I hope you'll continue to call the show, John. You won't bolt from us.
No, I will. I have to think about my answer. I'll think about it some more.
So if the space show did a Bay Area Evo Laterra, I don't know how many people would come. And you and your family were invited to come, and it was at some decent place that wasn't eons of traffic and miles to travel, worse than going to the moon, for example. Do you think your family would come if we did something that was larger than just your family?
I think that might work better.
So we find some restaurant, some place, not in San Francisco would be out of the question, but some place where I don't know how many people in the Bay Area would be here, but or they could come up from L.A. or Nevada or whatever they wanted to do. Let's say we had 20 people and find a place to do it. And it wasn't as personal as a family thing. Maybe Rand and Bill came up, or one of them came up for it. That's a thought for next year. Just try to localize it. But I would suspect that anybody who calls in will have something similar to say about having tried it with their own family and friends, as you've said. I don't think that by any means you're unique in that sense.
Yeah, though
I'll
point out, it's interesting that the people who like it the most, once they do it, are people who had no previous interest in space.
So I can repeat the one story I did when my kids were little and my wife's parents from Israel were visiting, and I did it in a public restaurant in Corte Madera, and the whole restaurant stopped, including the waiters, as we did an abbreviated one because it was a public restaurant. We had a reservation, and you know, they had people waiting, so we didn't go through the whole thing, but we went through a lot of it, and we had people listening, and I had copies off of my Xerox machine of it that I gave to my in-laws, who all speak perfect English, and my kids that were old enough that, you know, they could read and participate and be with it, and I gave away the copies to waiters and people in the restaurant who wanted it. Now, what they ever did with it, I have no clue, but they certainly paid attention to what we were doing. I had not anticipated that. I just thought it'd be like a little dinner party for eight people or whatever it was. But it caught a lot of people's attention, and this was a long time ago. But I think once it gets going and someone hears it, they're attracted to it. So I think the trick is to get it going.
Okay, well, I'll sign off and let other people in.
Thank you, John. And listeners, you can give us a call, and I promise I won't bite if you call. I won't ask that question again of anybody else. But we'd love to have you call, and 1-866-687-7223 is our phone number. And
David, I'm just looking at a story in TechCrunch right now, just for my previous discussion about Starship. So Elon is claiming now that they're going to fly in 2 to 3 months. Okay.
Starship. Okay.
Prototype.
Yeah. So
well, here's the other point. They've got two separate developments going on. This is what tells you that he's in a hurry. He's actually has a competition between Florida and Texas, and they're going to be, you know, learning from each other, and then ultimately it's going to be an evolutionary process, but they want to converge very quickly on a good design. Okay, so I'm not saying he'll hit that schedule, but that's what his current schedule says, 2 to 3 months. They want to, despite the fact they had that little conflagration the other day.
Now, where are you reading this again?
It's at TechCrunch.
Oh, TechCrunch. Okay.
TechCrunch.com. And this is a story from yesterday. Okay. So if he were to fly in 3 months, and that's going to be suborbital, he has said in the past he expects to be orbital 3 months after the suborbital flights. So that would say he expects to have orbital flights of the prototype next year, early next year. Okay, so suppose he misses that by 2 years. That's still a pretty damn fast schedule compared to anything that NASA could possibly imagine doing.
Well, he'll be,
if they're forced to use SLS Orion.
Well, he'll beat SLS for sure, because SLS keeps being delayed.
I look forward to the day that Elon gives Dick Shelby a call from the moon.
You have an email. Andy is in San Diego, and he says, Rand or Bill, do either of you ever hear Musk talk about what he's doing to advance the state of art of human factors and medical concerns for a flight to Mars and getting there so the crew can walk off the Starship and land and walk around and be on Mars and spacesuit development? We hear about his rocket technology and engine development. What about the human side?
No, he never talks about that. That doesn't mean he's not doing anything about it, but he certainly never discusses it.
You have another phone call. Bill, do you want to comment on that or take the phone call?
No, take the phone call. I don't have any insights on that.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the show with Rand and Bill. Who are you and where are you? Thanks for calling.
Hi, this is Kim in Mexico.
Hi, Kim. You're on.
There's a few things I always think about each time I read Volaterra, because to me the way it resonates is as a way of trying to approach the religious instinct in human beings with something that includes scientific method. And that doesn't necessarily exclude mystery, but it's a different approach. And to me, that's what's attractive about it. It has a very interesting perspective. It educates you as to what happened. It reminds you what happened. But that, to me, is what is most attractive about it. And what do you think about that?
Well, that was certainly the intent, part of the intent. And I should say, and I won't mention any names, but one of the people who was reading it last night kind of broke down.
Hmm.
Momentarily.
Emotional. He became emotional. Not. He didn't.
Yeah, I don't mean he had a breakdown. I mean, yes, he got very emotional.
Yeah, it was emotional for several people.
Yeah. And maybe it's because it's 52 and we're all getting old. You know, so it was sort of a, you know, the magic of you know, a number with a zero after it, or particularly to say it's like half a century. It's, we ultimately felt like we just had, you know, even though some years we don't do it, we had to do it this year.
But I have to say, I've been pleasantly surprised by the amount of coverage Apollo 11 has gotten this week. You know, I knew it was going to be commemorated, but I didn't expect it to be considered quite as much as it was. And Google had their animation narrated by Michael Collins, and I teared up both times I watched that. And things like this are always very emotional for me, and I think that's what makes it, that's what singles it out as potentially being something that can be used as the basis for a spiritual philosophy.
Kim, was there news coverage of it in Mexico? I'm not talking about the outside of Mexico press, but within Mexico, what was the coverage of Apollo 11 like, or was there any?
I watch pretty selective news pieces in Mexico that are mostly about internal things. Certainly there was coverage, but just that kind of coverage here I don't pay much attention to, so I couldn't comment very much.
Okay. Do you think people in Mexico would do the Volaterra ceremony if you, let's say, you wanted to coordinate that one year?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's a really different perspective down here. I don't know how it would compare with people who are not upper class in places like India and China who have a major space program. But as far as Mexicans are concerned, they don't have such a thing and they never will. I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying that's how they feel about it.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, to them, especially these days, they feel dominated by the United States. And although they, of course, admire these kinds of achievements, and whenever I mention that I work on a space project, there's this tense silence afterwards. It's tremendously confusing to them, and they don't know what to say. So, there you go.
Okay. Any other comments for Rand and Bill?
Well, I guess, I mean, to me, there's something important about this. This is the seed of something. And when I hear other people talking about how hard it is to get it to propagate, lots of things that eventually have become extremely popular have started out struggling to get noticed, and because they don't really belong in the time where they were first invented, and then things develop in such a way that they become popular. And hopefully this is such a case. Western society is not, they don't raise people to think about things in ceremonial terms. We don't invent ceremonies. We do our old ceremonies and don't even really feel the same about them as we ever did when they were invented. So this is a really different thing. And that's why I think, you know, the media aren't going to pick it up because they know it's really, it's so offbeat. They wouldn't risk covering it because it's, people are going to kind of say, what? You have to, but hopefully it will get rolling with time.
I have an email that came in through the blog. Kim, stay on the line a minute. Rick Kwan sent this in, so I believe all of you know Rick. But he proposed something interesting and innovative. It occurs to me that doing Ebola Terra as an event in a hacker space would be interesting. They are not necessarily space-oriented folks, but certainly tech-oriented. Non-space tech people would probably be intrigued by what they see and hear. So any thoughts on that, guys? As that kind of a forum, tech people, but not necessarily space people?
Some. I can also imagine hostility.
Why would they be hostile?
Because a lot of tech people, they tend to be kind of somewhat leftist, particularly the younger ones. And so they buy into this, how terrible Western civilization is, and they don't necessarily, because you see a lot of the diversity crowd are involved in tech or infiltrating tech, or in some cases, as at Facebook and Google, have taken over tech. So I can easily imagine Google employees being hostile to this, just based on what I've read about the culture there and with the James Damore and everything else.
They could certainly do Evo. I've been at Google and I've been in their main cafeteria, which is better than probably 99% of the restaurants in the Bay Area. But I mean, I could just see them doing Ebola Terra there. God, they've got hundreds of people there that eat their meals there and have an unbelievable choice of what they can have. I would think it'd be a great forum for a group of people to just spontaneously do it together over in the corner or something, and maybe others would join in and pay attention to it.
I'm not opposed to it. I think it could actually become controversial internally.
No clue. It hasn't been done, and I know there are Google people who listen to the Space Show. And
that we know of.
That I know of, yeah. I know of many, and I know they have heard the Ebola Terra show. But as far as I know, there's never been an attempt to do Ebola Terra at Google. Bill, any of your thoughts on the tech world? You're involved in tech.
No. I think Rand summed it up pretty well. My observation is the people who will gravitate this or resonate with it the most are non-tech people. We're talking about right brain, left brain.
Uh huh.
It's the right brain people that would relate to this. The artists, artisans.
Okay.
The tech people, no, they don't want to do ceremonies.
Kim, any thoughts on this or Rick's note?
Well, it just crossed my mind that Google has a program called Google Tech Talks. I don't know if they still do, but they had for years. And I used to watch those every now and then. And to the way those work is that anybody who works at Google can propose that somebody be invited to do a presentation to Google employees, and it's totally optional. It's like all this play psychology that they try to incorporate into their work model. And two of the talks that I saw through this medium are things that, at the time at least, I probably would never have considered watching if I came across them in another format. One was Rupert Sheldrake, and the other one was Dean Radin. I'm forgetting his
name. Dean Radin. I know Dean, yeah.
Dean Radin.
He's a consciousness expert, yeah.
Yes, and Rupert Sheldrake is into exploring, trying to document real cases of extrasensory perception. So they're both really out there. But because actually part of what they think is effective is to try to get people to think out of the box, to use a really tired term, they allow these people in, and I found their talks interesting, although I don't know whether or not I agree with them. So, you know, there's always... It depends on how you attack the issue. I think there's certainly a way to not stumble over ideological issues.
Okay. Kim, anything else?
No. I'm glad this is always on the space show, and I think it will eventually take hold.
Thanks for calling, and Rick, thank you very much for your blog post, commentary, email. We appreciate both of you. Listeners, Kim has left our line, so it is available if you would like to call us. And again, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. We've missed our break again, but let me just real quickly thank our second segment sponsors, because that is important. They help keep us going. The Space Development Network sponsors us. Would you like to see space settlement occur in your lifetime? The Space Development Network is an online organization allowing you to join together with others to advance the plan for space development. They're looking for people with a wide variety of interest and skills. It's a free network to join, so check it out at developspace.com. Celestis sponsors us, and once again, they're the iconic pioneer Memorial Spaceflight Services. You can fly the ashes of your loved one, or DNA, if you don't cremate. You can have your DNA go with your loved one as well. And you can go to low Earth orbit. You can go to Earth orbit. You will soon be going to the moon. And they hope that they will be going to missions beyond the moon in the very near future. It's a great organization, and as you all know, I have flown 3 times with Celestis with my mom and 2 dogs. It's a very moving and a really meaningful ceremony. And if you're interested in this, I urge you to give them a call or check them out, celestis.com. The National Space Society sponsors us, and they have a great event in it. Can't even talk. ISDC, and they do other sub-events like on space settlement. They're a nonprofit. Check them out at nss.org. Actually, it's now space.nss.org. And then the Integrated Space Plan sponsors us, and they still have their Kickstarter plan going to upgrade the Integrated Space Plan for this year and create the Race to the Moon poster. This shows the milestones accomplished by the U.S. and Soviet Union when they raced to the moon. There have been tremendous changes in the space landscape since the last Integrated Space Plan, and this edition will have the BFR or Starship mentioned. It was not mentioned in the previous one, and your support is needed to create an updated space plan for 2019, because the future is brighter than ever. Visit their campaign on Kickstarter and support it. You can get to it by going to thespaceplan.com. Rand, tell us about your event last night, because apparently you did the Ebola Terra ceremony.
Yeah, we did. As I said, we'd been kind of earlier in the week pounding out. It's sort of been planning on doing it, but we're thinking about maybe doing it today. that time we realized, you know, it's the 50th anniversary, and, you know, if we don't do it ourselves, how can we, you know, persuade anybody else that they should do it? So, but it was very small. It was just half a dozen people. And none of them young. I think the youngest person present was like in his late 50s. So, you know, it just kind of brought home the fact that it's been 50 years. You know, it's hard to believe it's been 50 years. And all of us there, you know, were cognizant of what was going on at the time that it happened. So it was more poignant than usual when we did it, I think. So the kind of funny thing is that because it was us doing it, you know, the authors, and one of the people in attendance is one of her former lives as a copy editor, you know, we're sitting here and we're actually finding typos and things in the ceremony to go, and Bill's marking them down, you know, to go to do a 2019 version, which is something that most people performing the ceremony would not be doing, you know, unless they were really pedantic and then they wanted to send all the corrections into us.
Can you tell us who participated? Do you want to do that?
I don't know if we should do that without their permission.
How long did it take to do the ceremony?
Typical. No, we didn't slow it down much with the side talk. It's a 45-minute ceremony before dinner, and then a few more minutes afterwards. It was pretty standard performance.
Was everybody there familiar with Apollo and the space program, or did they?
Oh, yes. Everybody there were space people.
So you had all space people there?
Yeah.
Had anyone done Ebola Terra before? Other than you?
Yes, two of them had. One of them has many times, in fact. One of them had done it himself at his own home and invited us to attend and done it on their own as well.
These are
old hands for the most.
old souls, old space souls, right?
Yeah, and they're all intimately familiar with the ceremony.
Bill, do you do the ceremony?
Well, I was there.
Oh, so you were there as part of last night.
Two people who were there.
I know two. Okay, but other than last night, Bill, do you do the ceremony?
Well, if we do the ceremony, it's always with Fran.
Over the years, we've always
done it together. We've done it at different locations. And with different groups of people. I remember one time we probably had about 15 people. It depends. But,
I have another email question. Let me work this one in, okay? This is Todd in San Diego, who emails us all the time. He's never called. But Todd says, guys, I would like a clear and articulate response, if you can do it. Why is it so damn important to go back to the moon?
Well, that's a different, not necessarily an Ebola Terra related question, but I think it's important because it's the... You know, Kraft Ehrke used to say, if God wanted us to settle space, he'd have given us a moon. And now I would say, if, you know, to the degree I believe in God, which isn't strong, if God wanted us to settle, you know, it's an expression, if God wanted us to settle space, he'd have given us a moon with water on it.
Well, he did give us a moon with water
exactly.
on it, right?
So I think the point is that we need, if we're going to... If you're not going to settle space, there's no reason to go to the moon. Okay? There's no reason to send people into space at all. If the purpose is not expanding humanity out into the solar system. But if that is your purpose, the moon's a pretty good place to start.
Bill, any additional thoughts on that?
Well, our ultimate goal is to settle the western arm of the Milky Way galaxy, and the stars is the moon.
Yeah, that's the short term goal.
The western arm of the Milky Way.
Yeah, I mean, eventually we'll get out to the other ones as well. that's where we start.
It's an extraterrestrial imperative. We're drawn, as it says, up and away to the far horizon. We've always been drawn to adventure, to explore, to climb the mountain. That's an inherent part of us. Why? Don't know. But it's part of us. And the moon has been drawing us for time immemorial. And we reached a point where technology allowed us to actually accomplish that goal. That was 50 years ago. But that wasn't the end. We want to expand out into space.
Yeah, and Clark wrote about
it. We can also look at it from the practical standpoint that Elon highlights, and that is there's a global catastrophe could wipe out humanity. But if you have humans on multiple bodies in the solar system, then an asteroid hit or a super volcano or whatever won't necessarily wipe out Homo sapiens. Okay, that's one way to guarantee it, and it may be an evolutionary drive that's built into us to ultimately do this.
I would also point out that there are some fundamental philosophical things about this. And I would say that if you don't believe that humanity should be going out into the solar system, you probably don't like humanity very much.
Now, why is that?
Because it's a limits to growth, people. People who think that we're destroying the planet and we shouldn't be allowed to go out and trash another planet because we're destroying the planet because humans are terrible creatures, and that, I wrote an article, an essay, 17 years ago, called A Cancer on the Face of the Universe. Some people literally think that we're like an infection that must be confined to the planet on which it evolved. The people who are fit, they say we have to have population growth. And my response is always, you first. So it's a fundamentally different outlook. Bezos wants a trillion people living in the solar system, he says, because then we'll have a thousand Mozarts or a thousand Einsteins or whatever. I'm not sure it really works that way. But Julian Simon, the late Julian Simon, said the ultimate resource is human beings. But there are a lot of people who believe exactly the opposite, and that we're using up all the resources, even though that's not really possible to use up all the resources. The only finite resource in the solar system is the sun. Eventually the sun will burn, but everything else can be infinitely recycled. We can always continue to reduce entropy everywhere except the sun. Locally.
I have another email question from everybody, and Larry is in Tucson. And Larry says, David, I watched the stream of your Griffith Observatory panel discussion on Thursday evening. Rand and Bill, one of the panel members, said that the only reason to be going to the moon was for space solar power, and then he spent 20 minutes explaining why that was the only reason, because through space solar power, briefly, we can save Earth. And he talked about energy and other things like that. Is space solar power a reason for going back to the moon?
It may be a reason, but not the reason.
Excuse me, I forgot to silence my cell phone.
Yeah. No, I don't agree that that is the only reason. There are lots of reasons to go back to the moon. And it may be that we will power Earth from the moon, but I think that there are lots of, Lockheed's working on a fusion plant right now. It's at Skunk Works. There's a lot of competition to getting terrestrial energy from space. That's not, that's where you're converting the solar power in space.
Uh-huh.
And there are technical barriers and there's socio-political barriers. Because people aren't going to like power beaming, and people aren't going to want to have, they're afraid they're going to get cancer from the rectenna, it's not a high density power source either. I think probably better nuclear is probably going to beat it out at some point. So it's a possible thing, but I wouldn't put all my money on it.
Callers, we still have time for your emails and your phone calls. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Email remains drspace@thespaceshow.com. Wanda is in Portland, Oregon, and she says, is there a favorite part or something that you consider the most important part of the ceremony? For example, if it was to be done and someone wanted to abbreviate it down, is there something that you consider a must that must not be abbreviated out of the ceremony?
That's a good question. I've never thought about it.
What I would say is that the ceremony used to be longer when we started it. It was much longer. So it's already abbreviated.
What, did you cut some out of it?
Well, the idea was to make it eloquent as opposed to being just a lecture, you know.
Yeah, it started out, the very first version was basically photocopies from a space history book. We just Alan Katz just grabbed, got some pages from, I can't even remember what book, it might have been Manned Space Flight. That's where we got the part of the ceremony where Buzz is calling out the numbers as they descend. So we took that thing and then we kind of started to rewrite it, and then we rewrote some more and people looked it over and made suggestions, and we tried to get it, we tried to make it more, I'd say, eloquent, biblical, if you want to use the word, kind of reduce the grade level, to make it more universal, while not losing any accuracy. We're not really answering the question, I guess, but I guess the point is that we feel like there's not much you could really take away from it without kind of losing something.
So, but is there a favorite part that both of you have?
Well, people always like to read Be Buzz. I always enjoy reading the Clark quote about, because we were talking earlier about the moon, how the moon...
Right.
The moon drew life out of the seas. So that was like sort of the first thing that the moon did for evolution and life, because it created the tides, and then there were these creatures in the shallows that eventually they adapted to the shallows, and then they started figuring out, well, we can stay out of here, we can stay out of the water longer, and eventually they became land creatures, and then the moon it created astronomy, it let us. It helped us do our crops. It helped, in a sense, it helped create mathematics itself. You had to follow, in order to do the crop rituals, which eventually became religious rituals, based on this monthly thing. And, it even influences our physiology. There's a reason that women have a lunar cycle. So the moon has always, has driven life forever. And so now, as Clark wrote, finally it, Earth life responds with a roar, and we actually summit us all the way to itself.
Bill, do you have a favorite part?
I've been thinking and thinking. I don't know if I could point to any one part. I think maybe the prelude. The prelude section where we describe basically from the beginning of the Big Bang, which is what we accept as the beginning of the universe, it's a very concise, beautiful description of this unfolding development in the universe that ultimately leads to Earth, and then life on Earth evolving, and then eventually to a point where there's a species that's intelligent and knows it's and is self-aware, and that can do stuff. And then that leads into the stuff that that species, that would be humans, are doing. And that is an unfolding, another unfolding, evolving story. of understanding the universe and then applying those understandings through technology. And that leads right up to the present. So I like that. I like the prelude.
That's the part that we would want to be done in schools. Right, and to which a lot of religious parents would object.
Well, there's something.
Either they're young Earth creationists, or they object to the notion that Earth formed and life evolved without a conscious, you know, hand of a creator.
Well, there's somebody is going to object to something. I don't think it's possible to get an objection-free anything anymore.
Of course not.
But you do have sort of a related email that has come in, and I know how you're going to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. This is from Kirsten in Dallas, and Kirsten says, "Don't dismiss my idea willy-nilly. After all, and decades ago, Apollo 8 actually read from the Bible, but it would seem to me on the Apollo 11 anniversary, this would be a very appropriate thing to do from the ISS. Have you ever proposed that to NASA?"
I haven't, and I probably wouldn't.
You would not propose it to them?
Well, I wouldn't oppose it. I wouldn't oppose it being done, but I don't know why I would bother to propose it to them, particularly given, you know, how politically sensitive it would be in the current day.
So you,
yeah, and you got Russians there too.
Well, but but they it's their history too, even though they
indeed,
you know. So
and they may even be Christians for all we know, but because, you know, it's no longer a crime to be, you know, a Christian in Russia, as far as I know.
Or this would probably be seen as too religious and too politically incorrect for today from the ISS.
Yeah, well, I mean, they couldn't, you know, you could not do what they did on Apollo 8 today, or it would have really, you know, aroused a lot of ire. And in fact, even at the time it did, I think that
it did arouse ire.
Madeleine Murray O'Hare, you know, sued NASA, as I recall. Right. So,
yeah, she
but anyway,
did.
Honestly, I just don't see the benefit of it, because, as I say, this ceremony is not the Christian story. It is explicitly not the Christian story. It's not even the God of Abraham story. You know, it's simply the best, our best understanding, scientific understanding of how life evolved on Earth. That's not to say that there is no God, but there is no need for the purpose of our ceremony to discuss that.
That's just, yeah, not part of anything. Where do we go? Where, when we do this program, and hopefully we'll all be here and we can do it in 2020, do you think anything will have changed?
Yeah, I think it's likely that Starship will have made some progress. And we're talking a year from now. Elon's talking 3 months from now for suborbital flight, and 6 months from now for orbital flight. So if that happens, that's going to be a hell of a huge change.
You know, in that same CBS interview, I saw excerpts of it. I've not seen the whole thing. Musk said that he was inspired by Apollo 11, and that there would be no SpaceX without Apollo 11.
Yes.
And I think he's serious when he says that.
And that raises an interest, because I often say that, you know, Apollo was a setback in terms of opening up space, and I still believe that, but that's not to say that it didn't do anything positive, that it doesn't have some positive effects, and that's one of them, is that it did inspire, I'm sure, both Jeff and Elon,
and many people who went to school and learned how to do this stuff and who work for them and other people.
Yeah, I guess my concern about Apollo is it was inspiring, but it inspired a lot of the wrong things. Because it inspired us to think that this is the only way that we can get into space, is to have a president make an announcement, and then everybody gets behind it, and then a few years later, you know, Mars. And that's not how it's going to happen. As I often say it, Apollo can't happen again, because it just barely happened the first time. If Kennedy had lived, Apollo would have died. I think most historians, space historians, agree he himself probably would have canceled it or turned it into a joint program with the USSR or something else, but it would not have unfolded the way it did.
If you had an opportunity to privately meet with the president, the vice president, and Bridenstine, and could absolutely guarantee perfection in no leaks, no outside people ever hearing what went on in this meeting, how different do you think President Trump and Vice President Pence and Bridenstine would be from what you propose and talk about? Mostly you, Rand.
Well, the notion of me talking to Trump and not getting out seems kind of improbable.
Forget this is all hypothetical and crazy.
Right. I don't know. It's so hypothetical that I don't really know how to answer it. Bridenstine knows the score, okay? Trump doesn't. Trump is just impatient. He wants to make America great in space again, as we've seen from he's a hard boss to manage. I don't know what Pence knows and what Pence doesn't know, but Bridenstine knows that he's in a political box that he can't really. There's no way for him to break out of currently. I think what he's trying to do is. I'm not answering your question because I don't know what I would even.
Well, it's not really what you would say because we know how you believe it's. I'm just curious as to how different they would be. Would they reject your ideas as way to go?
I'm sure Bridenstine would probably agree with me. Okay. I don't know if Pence even has enough background to have a strong opinion about it. He just wants to. He's nominally head of the Space Council. That's really run by Scott Pace, and he's got a lot of other stuff on his plate. And so does Trump. It's Bridenstine has a full-time job, and that's trying to make this stuff happen.
So let me add Scott Pace to the mix. Would he be if you were in this absolutely guaranteed secret meeting? Would Scott be in a line with you?
Well, I've had secret meetings with Scott recently. In fact, I think Scott is. Starting to come around, realize that, because he's long been a proponent, very vocal proponent, and also a private proponent of SLS, because he really feels that's an important having NASA build big rockets, maintains an important national capability. I've never agreed with that, but that's what Scott thinks. But I think that if Starship starts flying, and if Starship and the origin start flying, I think everybody's going to have to throw in the towel and say, okay, it's time to start relying on the private sector to get into space. But I think I haven't talked to Bridenstine about it. The only conversation I've had with him was when I asked him if he'd read my book, and he told me he had. He's a smart guy. He understands what his political constraints are. He's not doing things the way he would like to do them, but he understands where the money comes from.
So if the moon program, as we know it, that the government talks about, does not work and does not get the funding, does the negativity of it not working enter in as a campaign issue? Because going to the moon is likely not a campaign issue on its own.
Yeah, I don't think. I just don't see it as a political issue. I mean, in terms of campaign, in terms of people, normal people caring.
So they won't care if it happens, and they won't care if it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I guess they would care if it happens, except you're going to get the usual suspects saying the same thing they said in the 60s, why are we wasting money?
Right, they're already saying that, yeah.
And I don't know, I just don't see a repeat of Apollo in terms of inspiration, in terms of, as I say, it was politically popular. It only had majority public support about the time of the first landing. It didn't, throughout the 60s, there was not a majority support for it. And after the first landing, the support dropped, which is why that Nixon just canceled the last two missions, because he didn't see any political gain from it, and he did move on to Skylab and shuttle. So no, I don't see any good much politics, either good or bad, in the very almost impossible, improbable event that NASA actually gets people to the moon with SLS Orion.
Mary is in Boulder, Colorado, and she says, I'm a space advocate at the University of Colorado. Many of my peers here are not. I'm wondering if there is a way that you can suggest I use Evola Terra to help support humans in space and going to the moon, maybe not with the government program, but even the private sector. Most of the people I know don't care one way or another. Is there an effective way I can use Evola Terra in lobbying my friends and classmates?
Absolutely.
What?
Absolutely.
Tell her how to do it.
No, just, okay. Next Saturday night, have a dinner party. Invite six of your friends. And do the ceremony. It doesn't have to be done on the 20th. And then if it works out, do it again the next Saturday with some other people. Just do it and try it and see what happens, see what the response is. That would be, that's how you use it.
To the first part of her question, though, I'm not sure how to use it. There's always a danger of a Evola Terra because it does celebrate Apollo. And so there's a constant danger of creating a sense that the only way we can go to the moon is the way we did it the first time. So
Rand, I wouldn't worry about that. That's not what Evola Terra is about.
I agree, but that's
okay,
how
okay. So Evola Terra, wait. Evola Terra is the forward, the prelude, and the epilogue. Okay, and the part about landing on the moon happens to be just the historic recollection of that event. There's nothing here that's affirming Apollo.
Well, I agree. The epilogue describes an expansive vision of humans in space. But there are many people who think, oh, but that always starts with NASA. That always starts with, we just have to get back to the moon the way we did it the first time. Because we don't address that in the ceremony. So people who want to read that can, and they do.
Okay, my recommendation again is, and I would really implore her to do this, please, do the ceremony, pick a weekend and have a party. You'll enjoy it. It's a good excuse for a party.
Yes, absolutely. I don't disagree with that advice.
Well, Mary, if you do it, we would love to have you report back to us. So please keep that in mind. You can either email me and tell me, or better yet, call an open line show, or if you have an awful lot to say about it, maybe with even one or two of your key friends, we can do a space show based on what happens and your experience. So please do keep that in mind. Guys, we're coming up on the 90-minute program, which is the usual time for the space show. Is there anything we're omitting that we should think about for going forward, or about Evola Terra, or about this 50th anniversary that we haven't really talked about, or that either of you want to talk about or mention?
No, I'm dry.
Well, I would like to just make some comment about the earlier, I believe it was an email about why we need to go to the moon. Why is it so damn important?
Yeah, for that.
And,
uh-huh.
All right. Well, number one, we can put radio telescopes on the moon, on the far side of the moon. So from research, it's important. And if we don't go to the moon, the Chinese are going to go, the Japanese are going to go, and the Russians are going to go.
And the Indians are going.
And the Indians. In other words, everybody in the world will go. But so we're going to the moon. The question is, who is the we? So humanity is going to go back to the moon. It may not be America. But if it's countries that don't share our values of we came in peace for all mankind, which is on the plaque, they could use it as a military base, which was always the threat.
Yeah, in fact, I would expand on that some, because Scott Pace gave a speech at the State Department when I was there 3 weeks ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, where he basically said, you know, we are going out into the solar system. We are going. We want to make sure that we take our cultural values out there and maintain human freedom. I don't remember those paraphrases of what he said, but basically that was the that's what he said and why it was important.
That
we get that it be Americans to go. Doesn't have to be just Americans, but Americans have to be out there, and that's what I've been working on with my project for, you know, making English solar system safe for English common law.
And that's the subject of another show, but it should be continued to discuss when you're ready to discuss it.
Yeah, well, we did it already, but yeah, I'm happy to.
But well, we did it once, but I read from your emails that that you send me. Thank you for that. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And there's movement going on. So you think making sure that our cultural values are out there for everyone's benefit is really key. You believe that?
Yes, absolutely.
Both of you do believe that.
Absolutely. And therein is totally politically incorrect.
So then, do you think the private sector that we have been talking about today is capable and is a good ambassador or a good proponent of carrying these cultural values out there? And then, if it is the private sector, do we need a space force to help make sure that those values are out there?
Ultimately, probably, yes.
Bill?
Yeah, commercial and doesn't really have a value system other than to be commercially viable. How would I put this?
No, but they're going to be the.
Here's the question: If SpaceX or Bezos landed on the moon for the first time, there was never Apollo. So in 2024, we're landing on the moon for the first time. Would they plant the flag?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's the question. That's the question. Would they plant the flag? That flag is symbolic of something.
Maybe they plant a SpaceX coat of arms or something, or logo.
Well, no, but that's the point. That's the point. So, and what value system? I know that Musk indicated that he wants a democracy on Mars. I don't know if he understands what a democracy really means.
Yeah,
a pure democracy. Well, it's questionable whether the guys who are geniuses at technology and making things happen are also geniuses at civilizing humanity. Let me put it that way.
Well, and it's also going to depend on who actually pays for that first landing on the moon. You know, Pete Warden like to say, you know, the first flag on Mars will be the coat of arms of Luxembourg. So if the Luxembourgians decide they want to, you know, be on the moon, then maybe that'll be the first flag this planet. And they pay Elon to do it.
Interesting.
But that's the point, is that a private industry does not have an ideology. It's, you know, they do what makes money within the constraints of the law and hopefully morality.
So then the only way to assure our culture is for NASA to go out there?
No. No, I think the way to assure our culture is to make sure that we have agreed upon norms of what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed. At some, for now, within the confines of the Outer Space Treaty, but ultimately the people who live there are going to decide how they live. The important thing is to send Americans out there, not NASA.
So the settlers from America.
Yes, settlers from America.
Okay.
As I often say, I mean, the way we did Apollo was, in some sense, kind of un-American. It's not the way Americans usually do things. But we had to beat the Soviets to the moon.
Bill, do you have any closing comments for us?
No. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, there's been many dropouts, so I wasn't able to hear the last part of the conversation. So, other than, do I have any comments? No.
So I was asking, and Rand responded about, is the only way to have our culture assured by sending NASA out there? And he said that the settlers have to be Americans, not NASA. And that's when I asked you if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, well, NASA is just an organization. It's an American organization. They, you know, those people do tend to be patriotic. I don't know what we're going to look. You could, as they say, how is it that you have to be able to defend the territory that you claim? And that's what it's going to come down to. If there are multiple entities claiming territory on the same territory on the moon, it's going to be a problem.
Well, hopefully you have rules that can figure that one out, right?
Well, right now on Earth we have rules and we have a hell of a time figuring that out between countries. We're just getting to the point where I don't even know if we're at the point where we're still having wars.
Well, we're not going to answer or solve that one on today's space show, that's for sure. But we need to get out there to really start solving a lot of these issues.
Well, I'll just very quickly say it's important that Americans get out there. It's not important whether or not that NASA get out there.
Okay.
NASA is just a government agency that was established, that was created for a specific purpose at a specific time, it may be past NASA's time. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Bill, did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, that's sort of a, yeah, I agree with Rand. It needs to be American and American values that get out there. How it gets done is a different discussion.
Okay. Gentlemen, and unless you have another comment or anything more in closing, we'll call this year's Ebola Terror Program concluded. Last call for a comment from either one of you.
Nope, I'm done.
Yeah, me too.
Well, hopefully we'll all be here next year, and we'll have something to report that will be substantially different regarding getting to the moon and getting out there, as we have been talking about during the last couple of minutes of today's program. Thank you both for joining us, and above all, thank you for your great Ebola Terror work. And listeners, just to reiterate a point that Bill made, you do not have to do this on July 20th. You can do it any time. So if you do it, we would like to hear from you as to your experience, how people liked it. We would like that feedback. So you can post it on the blog, or you can send it to me in private email. And if you want me to post it on your behalf, I'll be happy to do so. But it's more important for you to do it. And then, of course, we want the feedback. So thanks, everybody. And thank you to Rand and to Bill. Goodbye from today's space show. And everybody have a great upcoming week. And keep looking up.